Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Hello, folks. Welcome to The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network, Saturday night, October 30th, 2010. Tomorrow is Halloween. Well, this is show number 32 of The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day. It's sort of chilly out in the Sonora Desert here outside Tucson tonight. We're at 64 degrees. That's pretty chilly for us. May not sound chilly to some of you, but our humidity is 29%, and our dew point is 31 degrees, so it's fairly dry outside. Well, welcome to the Light of Day show. I got some sound bites I'm going to play on my show tonight. And this article here caught my attention right before the show started. This was on the Coast to Coast AM website a few days ago, and this is something Professor Jim McCanney is talking about in his new book he just released called The Diamond Principle. It has to do with getting people off the planet and colonizing outer space. This really caught my attention. This is posted on Fox News. This is actually from yesterday. But there's a various number of websites that are carrying this article. It's entitled, Is NASA Covering Up the 100-Year Starship? By John Brandon. A NASA official may have made a 35-million-mile slip of the tongue. That's how far Mars is away from us, folks. The director of NASA's Ames Research Center in California casually let slip mention of the 100-year starship recently. A new program funded by the super-secret government agency DARPA. And DARPA, folks, stands for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Now, in a talk at San Francisco's Long Conversation Conference, Simon Pete Warden said DARPA has $1 million to spend, plus another $100,000 from NASA itself for the program, which will initially develop a new kind of propulsion engine that will take us to Mars or beyond. There's only one problem. The astronauts will not come back. The 100-year ship would leave Earth with the intention of colonizing a planet, but it would likely be a one-way trip because of the time it takes to travel 35 million miles. That's a daunting prospect, partly because of the ethical dilemma, and partly because it may be the only recourse. What psychological challenges should we anticipate in those who volunteer in good faith and with great courage, yet find themselves confronting misgivings or loneliness or feelings of rage or beset with mental illness, asked Dr. Keith A. Blow, a psychiatrist and member of the Fox News Medical A-Team. There's one There's one other bizarre aspect to the plan. Humans would have to be adapted to the alien world, said Mr. Warden, instead of figuring out a way to make the planet more hospitable to them. The human space program is now really aimed at settling other worlds, Mr. Warden said during his talk. 20 years ago, you whispered that in dark bars and got fired. Since that revelation, hundreds of news reports about the program have theorized that the substantial budget indicates the 100-year starship is a dramatic shift for the stalled space program, not just a research project. Others suggested is a serious attempt to find a way to Mars. And NASA? The space agency seems to be dodging all the questions. After a week and a half, DARPA issued a press release announcing the program, but conveying no more information than in Mr. Warden's initial speech. So that article goes on and on, but, you know, this is something that was leaked out to the masses back in the late 70s, folks, with that British TV documentary, Alternative 3, and it sort of makes sense to me if the planet X, the so-called cosmic event, is impending. This may pertain only to the elites, because they're sure not going to be concerned about getting over 6 billion people off the planet because of a catastrophe. Alternative 3, this British TV documentary back in the late 70s, mentioned three alternatives, and I don't have the first two pulled up here, but Alternative 3 was to build a transfer station on the backside of the moon, build an underground base on Mars, and remove a certain limited Noah's Ark cross-section of Earth's population, like artists, scientists, engineers, writers, etc., to Mars as a survival colony in the event of catastrophe on Earth. Now, this sort of connects the dots with what I've been witnessing here recently. We've been having an extraordinary amount of celebrities dying all of a sudden. I got to thinking the other day, are these people really dying, or are they headed underground, or maybe to some, you know, off-world facility, and because of the Earth cataclysms that are coming our way. We had Bones, that guy Bones from Star Trek passed away, Christopher Reeve from Superman. We just had somebody from the TV show Hawaii Five-O pass away. It was one from, the guy that plays Dad on that show Happy Days, he just died. One of the women from that Golden Girls show, she just died. And, you know, we've had a lot of celebrities dying. Michael Jackson, that's another one. I mean, just look it up, folks. There's been tons of celebrities passing away. And I got to thinking, in their weird, you know, the elites have a weird rationale for doing things, but they may need a cross-section of, you know, of the celebrity-slash-entertainment industry to continue the human race after the cataclysms for some reason. Another thing to look out for as the Earth changes get closer are going to be world-renowned dignitaries either faking their deaths or dying in sudden plane accidents, etc. So there's a number of things to watch out for that would indicate that the Earth is about to undergo solar scorching as a result of the cosmic event. Now, the reason I found this article off Fox News about NASA covering up the 100-year starship is because I was actually checking out the preparations for Wednesday's space shuttle launch of the Discovery. I'm going to read an update off NASA's website here. This is dated today at 7:46 a.m. Mountain Time. Countdown to start tomorrow for targeted launch Wednesday. This will be the last mission for the Space Shuttle Discovery, by the way, folks. NASA Test Director Jeff Spalding said this morning the launch team is confident that repairs to quick disconnect fittings in the system used to pressurize the Discovery's right orbital maneuvering system rocket engine will allow the shuttle to launch Wednesday. The targeted launch time is 3:52 p.m. Right now we're in a good path to get there, Mr. Spalding has until Sunday, November 7th, to launch in the current window, Spalding said. Discovery is going to the International Space Station on mission STS-133. It will attach the permanent multi-purpose module packed with supplies, equipment, experiments, and Robonaut 2 to the station. Robonaut 2, folks, is on board. It's a prototype robot that would help assist astronauts in future space of Voyages. We'll be back. You're listening to Live, Dan and Ryan. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live Saturday night, October 30th, 2010. This is show number 32 of the Light of Day. It's currently about 64 degrees here in the Sonora Desert right outside Tucson, Arizona. Well, back to what I was talking about here on the space shuttle preparations for Wednesday's launch. They're going to have a Robonaut 2 on board. This is a prototype robot that would be used to assist astronauts in future space exercises. Now, this is really something. I think they're called the short name for the Robonaut 2 is R2. Now, I remember we had R2-D2 on Star Wars, and there was the Death Star on Star Wars. Now, is this symbolic of something or what? I mean, here we have the Death Star. Moving our way, and here they're putting up this R2 robot on the shuttle Wednesday. Maybe in some weird way it has something to do with the Death Star coming our way. This seems like a potential dot connector there for some reason. Well, anyway, this show is devoted to exposing the inbound passage of the Red Comet of Doom, also known as the Death Star, Nibiru, the Planet of the Crossing, the Destroyer, etc., etc., has many names. The show is also devoted to exposing the ruling power elite's preparations for this event, which is an ongoing, recurring, predictable, cyclic event, and if you're prepared, you won't be scared. Now, folks, Planet X really isn't a planet. It's either a T or L-class series cold brown dwarf star. Now, when I say cold, I don't mean totally cold, but it's extremely cold compared to our own star our own sun, or such things as red dwarfs or yellow dwarfs. Now, I believe the name Planet X is perpetuated in order to diminutize its effectualities upon Earth and to make the topic appear as just some totally ridiculous issue. But I'm telling this show, folks, is only meant for maybe less than 5% of the population out there that are understanding what's actually happening here. I just gotta make sure I got everything covered here, okay. Now I'm gonna finish up this Bill Cooper soundbite from last week because I ran out of time, and then I'm gonna get into talking about the Midwest storm, which was actually a hurricane over dry land, because I confirmed that with John Moore's research associate Ann Morrison. It did meet at least three of the four criteria for identifying it as a hurricane. And I have a Bill Deagle soundbite I'm going to play, and some updates on what they're trying to warn us that there's solar storms coming our way. So you'll want to stay tuned into this show. It's going to be pretty good tonight. I'm going to finish up this Bill Cooper soundbite last night that dealt with the faked extraterrestrial threat that the elites are going to deploy upon the masses here pretty soon, possibly in the August 2012 Olympics over in the United Kingdom. So I'm going to play that now. So here it is, folks.
My kind is the kind that says, hey, this could be a scam. This could be leading us into world government. and we better be careful. Also, the alien scam was one of the proposals outlined in the report from Iron Mountain. It was a report on the probability and possibility of permanent peace. And we found reference to it going all the way back to 1917, and I believe I talked about John Dewey's speech in New York in 1917. We believe that the Mercury Theater broadcast of War of the Worlds by by Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater was a test of the hypothesis to see if the people would buy an alien invasion, and they did. Orson Welles is related to H.G. Wells, who wrote a book in 1939, I believe, called The New World Order, where he also proposed the same thing. So, see, I don't think it's a hoax, because I think that they're preparing the people for it. They've been telling us that nuclear weapons have been stolen from the Russian arsenal, that Korea's manufacturing atomic weapons, and Iraq has atomic weapons, and Iran has atomic weapons, and India has atomic weapons, and they're telling us that terrorists have penetrated the United States, and so they may have atomic weapons. I got to see a lot of things when I was with Naval Intelligence that most people never dream of in their life, and that set me on the path. I don't think it was a slip-up at all. I think it was intentional. I think the remarks made by Reagan were intentional. Nothing accidental about it. They've been trying to rule the world for a long time. If we're not careful, they're going to do it. They're real. I know that at least some of the technology belongs to humans of at least 3 or 4 different nations. And whether or not extraterrestrials are real, I don't know. The universe is too big for me to even venture to get into the realm of guesswork or speculation, which I don't like to do anyway. The chances that if they were real, they could find this Earth amongst the billions of stars that exist out there is pretty slim to me, but not beyond the realm of possibility. Usually when you can spot a scripted scam.
Yep.
And I used to really think a lot of Linda Moulton Howe, because she seemed to be the only one who was really looking at it objectively. But after you listen to her over a long period of time, she's not really at all. In my investigation, I found that Moulton and Howe, both of those names are famous names in the halls of the Masonic temples. And so she has that background in her family. And the same with a lot of these people. Stanton T. Friedman, oh yeah, it's his job to perpetrate the alien threat thing.
Yeah.
And after every one of his talks, he gives a little speech about how we all have to come together as one world to face this, and then he always says, who's going to speak for planet Earth? He is one of the main players. He says he's a nuclear physicist, but aside from his own resume, we can find no proof that he's ever been a nuclear physicist except what he writes on his resume. We know for the last 25 years he has not been a nuclear physicist. He has been a wandering UFO minstrel. The thing we have to be careful of is just because you saw this thing, and this just because you believe or actually did hear in your mind what you thought or what really may have been from this thing, does not make it extraterrestrial. The CIA has all the technology to be able to do every bit of that. Or could have been a very sophisticated hologram accompanied by an electronic mind control operation using microwaves and many other things that have been developed that's documented. There's no doubt about it. It's scientific fact. Been written about. It's come out in hearings in Congress. We have to be very careful what we believe when there is technology that exists that can make us believe whatever somebody wants us to believe. Go read your Bible. When everybody's saying he's coming, he's not going to come. He's going to come like a thief in the night. Christians don't like to hear that, but it's true. Whoever comes is going to be a scam. But you're all going to believe it's Jesus because
that's
what you want to believe. Well, I don't think he's coming. He's not coming. I'll bet you I'll be right. I didn't say never. I don't know if he's ever coming or not. I don't even know if he ever lived. There's no proof that the man ever lived. Religion is something that you have to believe in by faith, because there is no proof for it. There's no proof for life after death.
I'm just going to hang up because I'll talk.
Well, I'll just hang up on you. How about that? I didn't say Jesus didn't exist. I said I don't know if he existed or not. Neither does anybody else. If you believe in Jesus Christ, you have to.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion Saturday night, October 30th, 2010. We're going to wrap up this Bill Cooper soundbite. Keep in mind, this is at one time the most dangerous radio host in America, according to Bill Clinton and read on the air by Rush Limbaugh back in the mid-90s. Bill here was talking about his idea that Jesus was never coming back, so we'll finish that up now.
There is no proof for it. Bill. There's no proof for life after death.
I'm just going to hang up because I'll talk.
Well, I'll just hang up on you. How about that? I didn't say Jesus didn't exist. I said I don't know if he existed or not. Neither does anybody else. If you believe in Jesus Christ, you have to do it as an article of faith. If that makes you mad, screw you, Jack. Don't call me anymore, because you're going to get a dose of the truth on this show, whether you like it or not. Oh, the answer to Area 51. They got flying discs out there. They belong to the United States government. They're made by human beings. I don't know if there are pilots inside or they're remote control. They can do amazing things. I have filmed them. I've spent weeks out there watching them fly. I've been hassled and had every kind of confrontation with the goons out there that you can dream of. It's amazing how many people want to stay in their scam world. Don't want to know the truth. Don't care about the truth. Jesus is coming to save you. And for another group of people, the extraterrestrials are going to come and save you. And I'm telling you right now, ain't nobody going to save you but you. I don't know if there are extraterrestrials or not. I don't know if there are extraterrestrial craft or not. I know that there are strange flying objects in the sky that, according to what we're told about science, is not supposed to be made by humans, but once you begin to delve into what they've developed in secret, they, at least some of them are developed by humans, and either flown with somebody inside or flown by remote control. We don't know that, but we know that they belong some to the United States, some to the Soviet Union, some to Canada, and probably Great Britain. Have you been to Disneyland in Anaheim? You should go, because they have the most amazing, absolutely incredible holographic display in the sky every evening. And this is just Walt Disney with some cheapy stuff.
Right.
Just think what the government could do all over the world. I interviewed Travis Walton personally. He lives less than 30-minute drive from me at this very moment. He said he didn't see any spacecraft. He didn't see any flying saucer. All he saw is a brilliant white light in the woods, kind of a bluish white light. He got out of the truck and started walking toward it. Next thing you know, he felt like he'd been hit by a ton of bricks, and he woke up a week later laying by the side of the road. He said he only remembers one thing in between that time, a bright light and a feeling like he was suffocating. All the rest of it is fantasy. The boys in the truck didn't see a spacecraft or a flying saucer or a UFO. They saw a bright light in the woods. They saw something flash, and they saw Travis Walton fly through the air and land on the ground, and they got scared and left. We must have an enemy from outer space to justify coming together in a one-world government to oppose this threat.
Okay, folks, so that's the end of the Bill Cooper soundbite. He was actually talking about Travis Walton, that movie that came out called Fire in the Sky, that guy that was abducted by so-called aliens. That happened somewhere around Snowflake, Arizona. Well, we had a hurricane go over dry land here in the Midwest a few days ago. We're going to cover that right now. A gust, folks, of 81 miles per hour was recorded in Butlerville, Ohio, and 80 miles per hour in Greenfield, Indiana, according to NOAA. The unusual system mesmerized meteorologists because of its size and because it had barometric pressure that was similar to a Category 3 hurricane, but with much less destructive power. NOAA said the system's pressure reading Tuesday was among the lowest ever in a non-tropical storm in the mainland U.S. Spokeswoman Susan Buchanan said the storm was within the top five in terms of low pressure, which brings greater winds. Meteorologists said the storm's barometric pressure readings were comparable to those of a Category 3 hurricane, but with much weaker winds. The wind gusts were only as strong as a tropical storm. Category 3 hurricanes have winds from 111 to 130 in miles per hour. If Tuesday's low pressure system had been over water, where winds get higher, it would have created a major hurricane, Imey said. Now, I actually have a soundbite I'm going to play here where a meteorologist off of some TV station up in Green Bay actually referred to this as a cyclone. So I'm going to pull that up right now. We'll play that. Here it is, folks.
Here in Wisconsin, we're starting to see the beginning of the effects of what's being termed the Midwest cyclone. With precipitation and high winds, this system developed over the western Midwest late yesterday evening. Seen here over Minnesota, it's a large circular cyclone type of weather front, and now it's moving east towards the Great Lakes. Now, this is expected to bring some moderate precipitation, but excessively and extremely high winds. These winds can cause a lot of damage, and we're talking gusts up to 70 miles per hour. Now, as this story develops, we will bring you updates and if there's any danger or if there's any changes in the weather forecast. For Fasari from Green Bay, Wisconsin, I'm Marceau.
Okay, so that's off of, I believe, WFRB, Green Bay, Wisconsin. So there are a number of meteorologists that liken the characteristics of this superstorm as a hurricane, and I did confirm it with John Moore's research associate, who's heavily in the study in earthquake activity, Ann Morrison, that this did indeed meet at least three of the four traits of defining it or identifying this storm as a hurricane. Actually, according to Ann Morrison, at 1,000 feet up where the system had entered North Dakota, the winds were traveling 175 miles an hour. That's 1,000 feet above the deck, folks. Now, back to the article I was reading here. Midwest storm breaks U.S. pressure record. Keep in mind, folks, that it was Ann Morrison that was attending a certified emergency response training as a program in St. Louis County about 5 years ago, and there was a young meteorologist that came out, or a young NOAA scientist, actually, that came out in Ohio and said, wait until people start seeing these hurricanes forming over land. And, you know, this is one of the weird meteorological anomalies slash phenomena to look out for. As Planet X comes closer, we're going to start seeing more and more bizarre weather. Now, I did review Professor Jim McCanny's show from Wednesday, and according to him, what we've seen here with this hurricane over the Midwest was actually an electrical alignment between Jupiter, Venus, Earth, the Sun, and Comet Hartley 2, which made its closest approach to Earth. I think it was on Wednesday. There was an electrical alignment that occurred due to the passage of this comet, the comet helped accelerate the effects of this hurricane that developed over the Midwest. Really hard to tell if Planet X did actually cause this, but it does make sense that, you know, as Planet X gets closer, we are going to start seeing more bizarre weather like hurricanes over dry land. Well, I have a separate article here entitled Midwest Storm Breaks U.S. Pressure Record by Christina Pidanowski, Senior Meteorologist, October 27th. The pressure within the powerful storm that left a trail of destruction across the Midwest on Tuesday not only broke records in individual states and cities, but also one for the U.S. Big Fork, Minnesota recorded the storm's lowest pressure at 4:13 p.m. Central Time Tuesday. The pressure bottomed out at 28.2 inches. That's equivalent to a typical pressure within a Category 3 hurricane. The pressure within the Midwest storm dropped below the Edmund Fitzgerald storm of November 10, 1975, which is highlighted in the above video. That pressure is now the lowest recorded on land in the contiguous U.S. We'll be back, folks. You're listening to Light of Day. Stay tuned. Hello, folks. You're listening to The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion Saturday night, October 30th, 2010. Oh, boy, I got so much territory to cover here. It's unbelievable. I actually want to play an interview that was conducted by Gianni Hayes' sidekick, Andy Nunez, on the American Voice Radio Network from Wednesday night. Andy interviewed Gilbert Erickson and John DiNardo. The name of that show is called The New World Order Disorder. And I'm probably not going to be able to play all of it, but we'll end the show with that tonight. Anyway, back to this article about the Midwest hurricane. That pressure is now the lowest recorded on land in the contiguous United States outside of coastal states affected by northeasterners and hurricanes. Extreme Weather, a guide and record book, reports that the lowest pressure ever measured on U.S. soil occurred at Long Key, Florida, during the 1935 Labor Day hurricane. The pressure that day plummeted to 26.35 inches. Despite the new record, it should be noted that the current storm is actually the second strongest storm to sweep through the Great Lakes. With the current Midwest storm setting a record for the U.S., it is not surprising that individual states also broke pressure records on Tuesday. So this goes on and on. I don't want to spend too much time dwelling on that. You remember I was talking about the R2 robot that's going up on the space shuttle Wednesday? I got this off NASA's website during the break here. R2 to join space station crew. NASA will launch the first human-like robot to space this year to become a permanent resident of the International Space Station. Almost 200 people from 15 countries have visited the International Space Station, but the orbiting complex has so far not only ever had human crew members until now. Robonaut 2, R2, the latest generation of the Robonaut astronaut helpers, is set to launch the space station aboard Shuttle Discovery. It will be the first humanoid robot in space, and although its primary job for now is teaching engineers how dexterous robots behave in space, the hope is that through upgrades and enhancements, it could one day venture outside the station to help spacewalkers make repairs or additions to the station or perform scientific work. R2, as the robot is called, will launch into the Leonardo Permanent Multipurpose Module, which will be packed with supplies and equipment for the station and then installed permanently on the Unity node. So that article goes on and on, but, you know, this is pretty interesting. They're probably a lot more ahead than what they're telling us, of course. I actually had an email I got from Kimberly here that has to do with what she is perceiving as Skynet from the Terminator movies. There's an article put out by Tom Horn, and if I get some time here, I'll look that up. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but it has to do with some pretty big advancements coming for the human species here within the next 3 years. And you know what Tom Horn is telling us, they may be a lot more ahead in technology in terms of what they're actually telling us. Well, I do appreciate the donations I'm receiving for the Light of Day website. I thank Esther and Tim up in Long Lake and Richard in Canada and Phil in Pennsylvania for the donations. That comes to almost $140. It's not that I'm being charged to do this radio show, but I'm in a financial hump right now, and I really appreciate these four people that have donated to my cause. But I have a soundbite here I'm going to play from the Bill Deagle's Nutramedical report from Wednesday. You folks should find this interesting. It has to do with a coronal mass ejection that's actually headed our way and is supposed to get here on Monday. I'm going to play that now. You're listening to The Light of Day and Orion.
My scientist, Dan Morrison, contacted me with an email this morning. Solar sunspot number 1115 did explode yesterday in the last 36 hours. It is on its way to Earth. So we are going to have a coronal mass ejection strike Earth, but a much bigger one's coming probably in the next 2 weeks. Sunspot number 1117, with its geomagnetic storms occurring on the sun, is the largest probably in many, many years. And this particular one is aimed directly at Earth. It is a M-class explosion. It's about to happen probably in the first or second week in November. We are staring down the barrel. It's most likely to hit the southern hemisphere because we passed the equinox. But we're looking at a first or second week in November, CME striking the Earth. We have one that's going to probably hit the Earth, a smaller one, sometime in the next 7 days, they predict. They won't give us the exact velocity, but the sunspot 1115 has already happened. It's on its way to the planet. Sunspot 1117 is a major one. It's like standing in front of a shotgun. We're going to have some damage on the planet. We don't know where, but it's most likely to hit somewhere. Primarily, the energy will be displaced in the southern hemisphere, but can hit the north as well. So we'll monitor that story daily.
Okay, folks, so there's a soundbite off Bill Deagle's show, the Nutramedical Report, talking about this coronal mass ejection from the sun that's supposed to arrive here Monday. Now, this is something we really need to monitor, folks. We've been getting bombarded constantly with warnings from various agencies and people and that about impending solar storms. And then me and John DiNardo think the elites are going underground to evade the solar scorching that's going to occur as Planet X gets closer. Now, I did discover here within the last week that actually Tom Cruise has a $10 million underground shelter in Telluride, Colorado. And there's a number of other notable residents of that town. This is in the southwest corner of Colorado. And Oprah Winfrey is also one of the notable residents in Telluride, Colorado. Elevation for Telluride is almost 9,000 feet above sea level. That's a really great elevation to be to escape tsunamis that could wipe out most of the country, at least the coastlines anyway. It was actually John Moore that woke me up to the reality that various alphabet soup government agencies were relocating out to the Rocky Mountain region, including the CIA, the NSA. We got Monsanto in Denver. And according to Al Bielek, Denver is supposed to become the new western capital of the United States. We got all the high strangeness associated with the Denver airport and the humongous underground city underneath the Denver airport. So now this is just another great dot connector. I found out that Tom Cruise has a $10 million shelter there in southwest Colorado. In terms of talking about these solar storm warnings, keep in mind there was a tabletop exercise that was carried out in Boulder, Colorado earlier this year by FEMA on impending solar storms. We've got Michio Kaku coming on Fox to warn us all the time about this stuff. Now I just found this from about 4 days ago. This is on science at nasa.gov. Solar shield protecting the North American power grid. I'm not going to read all that, but if you folks want to look that up. And then, let's see. This was posted in the USA Today newspaper 4 days ago. One electromagnetic pulse burst and the world goes dark. If anybody wants the link for that, just email me at gem3intucson@q.com. That's gem, the number 3, in Tucson at q.com, and I'll ship that link over to you in an email. So we're constantly being bombarded here with warnings about impending solar storms. So we'll have to look out to see what happens Monday here with the arrival of this coronal mass ejection. Keep in mind on the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage, that was the theme at the end of the movie, is the solar storms that wipe out most of the Earth. I got a soundbite here by that Cheryl Nelson of Earth Changes at earthchanges.ning.com, I believe is the website. I'm not sure on that, but she's one of my fellow Planet X research associates, and she made a nice soundbite for me about what the safe elevation people need to be at from impending tsunamis as Planet X gets closer. And I'm going to see how much time I have left here. I really don't want to break to cut into this soundbite. Yeah, we only got maybe about a minute, and then we're going to have a long top-of-the-hour break, so I'll play that after the top-of-the-hour break. Just in case I don't get a chance to cover this, we had a Mount Merapi volcano go off in Indonesia. They had to evacuate thousands of people, and there was actually a 7.7 earthquake in Indonesia Monday night, which triggered a 10-foot high tsunami over there. There's I think the last count was over 400 dead. We'll be back. You're listening live, Dan Orion with Sheldon Day. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. We have more listeners than the big boys' HD2 channels. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.